Bill of the Week, once again, Wednesday, June 7th style, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We looked at a new bill allowing cities and towns to set up red light and speed cameras if they so desire. Pastor Rodney Wade, senior pastor of the Long Hill Bible Church in Waterbury, stopped by to discuss recent use of force issues involving the Waterbury Police Department. And Hearst, Connecticut editor and columnist Dan Haar stopped by for his weekly update. All right, so where do you want them? Get out your pad and paper, pen and paper. Where do you want them? Where do you want them to be put up in your city and or your town where you think the speeding is out of control? Them? I'm referring to right now at 7 after 2 in a midweek Wednesday. Speed cameras and red light cameras. Why? Because late in the day yesterday, I think this happened after we wrapped up the broadcast day here at 6 last night, the state Senate voted 27-9, all 36 members showing up for the vote, nice of them, a bipartisan vote. So, you know, there's a mix of Democrats and Republicans in there. The vote last night, 27-9, to pass recommendations from Connecticut's Vision Zero Counseling. You know, they have these Vision Zero initiatives around the country to try, and that's kind of the umbrella organization, the slogan for having people slow down, slow down generally, watch when you turn, don't run red lights, don't speed, this big Vision Zero push. So the chamber voted 27-9 to pass the recommendations from a state council known as the Vision Zero Council. That's a multi-agency panel headed by the DOT. And what that bill now means is we are going to, likely in some areas, whether you like it or not, and I'm guessing some people are going to love this and some people are going to hate this, whether you like it or not, there's a very good chance that if enough people in your city or town, and if they're upset about this, they should say enough. If enough people in your city and town want it, you can have a red light camera put up somewhere. Now, it's a detailed process. Again, they just can't willy-nilly, oh, we're going to put one up there and one up there and one over there because we need money. But there is a process in place here to try and prevent that sort of thinking. But whether you like it or not, it's on the way. And this vote was not close. It's 27-9. This passes a whole package of initiatives because, let's face it, people are driving like asses more and more. I had a guy, two guys. I'm pretty sure they were guys from what I can see. No cleavage visible. I'm kidding. Loosen up. Relax. One going home last night on 95 northbound and one this morning on 95 southbound heading in as I came in here to Connoisseur Media Broadcast Central. You know, some idiot, some moron on a bullet bike, you know, and not like traffic isn't moving. You know, we're doing 70, 75, and this guy comes along, and he's doing 80 or 90, and he's dodging in and out and weaving in and out of traffic. But I digress. People are driving more and more like idiots. So this is why this is happening. The recommendations include, and by the way, this story from the Connecticut News Junkie, Hugh McQuaid's story here. The recommendations include an option, relax, okay? You're not going to be spied on every time you leave your driveway. Pump the brakes a little bit on this, no pun intended here. Just relax. The recommendations include an option for towns and cities to employ speed cameras and red light cameras to enforce local traffic ordinances. Connecticut lawmakers have considered the camera bills for more than 10 years, and aside from a limited pilot program on the highway work zones, which I'm fine with, because people drive like jackasses still, even in work zones, The General Assembly has historically declined to embrace the idea. Well, it's getting bad. And I'm telling you, the reason they're doing it now, it's not so much a money grab. We have plenty of money. But the reason they are letting cities and towns do this is because more and more and more people are dying. At least 380 people died on Connecticut roadways last year, according to the DOT. And as of this past April, so January, February, March, that's 4 months into the year, right? So one-third of the year in the books this past April, another 80 had been killed this year. So again, there is going to be a process here. Municipalities that choose to adopt the traffic camera programs would be required to hold public hearings. So if this comes to your city and or your town, right, you will get a chance to comment on this. They cannot do this without any public comment. Now, it doesn't mean the comment's going to make any difference, and I don't say that with, you know, completely tongue-in-cheek, but I know a lot of you are out there saying, well, geez, Paul, that's great. What difference is it going to make what I think? Well, you may be right. You might. You might, Rabbit. You might. They would be required to hold public hearings and submit a plan to the DOT demonstrating that the cameras would be installed in areas likely to improve traffic safety. Okay? Again, reading along here, approved plans would be good for 3 years, after which towns would be required to seek state approval again. So your city or town would have to decide to go with it. Your city or town would have to give you input on it. Your city or town would have to come up with a concrete plan as to where they're going to put the cameras and why. They would have to explain to the people in the town or the city and the DOT why in these spots. And if they got an okay after all of that, they would have 3 years to get it done, and at the end of the 3 years, there would be, in a sense, a license renewal for that. Listen, I have no problem with this. Honestly, I don't. I know a lot of you people aren't going to be happy about it. I have no problem with it because, listen, if anybody has a brain in your city or town, right, if anybody has a brain, it's going to get around where these cameras are, right? I mean, come on. This isn't 1950 anymore. It's very easy with social media. You know, somebody jumps on a nice day and says, hey, I think they're putting in one of those speed cameras. Oh, yeah, that was that camera that was okayed by the town council. And then the DOT okayed it. Yeah, okay, so, hey, as of, you know, December 1, January 1, February 1, there's a speed camera or a red light camera or a stop sign camera at this intersection. Well, it's not like no one will find out about this. And if you're still dumb enough, and me too, I'll join the community of man on this. If we're still dumb enough to speed through an area with a speed camera, then guess what? We deserve to get a ticket. We do. And the first one is only going to be a warning, by the way. The way this bill is set up. So the first one is only going to be a warning. Right? So you're going to get one warning. Now, if you keep speeding through the area every day, I don't know if that one warning, you know, by the time you get it, could be 4 or 5 days late, and then you've done it 2 or 3 more times since. So I don't know what the particulars would be about that. But listen, if you or I mean, listen, I've been pretty dumb behind the wheel numerous times. I've told you that. If I'm dumb enough to keep speeding through an area when I know there's a red light camera or a traffic camera, you know what? I deserve to get fined. Don't you? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. There's been pushback from groups, including the Connecticut ACLU, over concerns about police surveillance, privacy, and due process. Bridgeport Democratic State Senator Herron Gaston supported the bill, although he worried the cameras would have the unintended consequence of disproportionately fining minority drivers. See, I don't get that. I don't understand that. Why? Please explain that to me. If there's not an officer involved, see, this is what I don't get. Honestly, I honestly don't get this line of thinking. I don't understand it. If there's not an officer involved saying, hey, I'm going to pull that black guy over there or that Hispanic girl, she's getting pulled over. Supposedly, there's no officer involved here. This is automatic. These are autonomous cameras here. So when I hear leaders, and I'm not saying this for effect, I don't understand it. If they say, well, the speed cameras are going to nab too many people of color, well, under this plan, that would mean that local authorities would have to okay the placing of these cameras in minority neighborhoods. And then the DOT would have to okay it, and the city or town would have to show the DOT that these are bad neighborhoods for speeding. Now, I know there could be challenges here. Well, you know, this neighborhood, it may be bad, but you have a white neighborhood that's particularly bad, too. Well, again, they would have to show that these cameras, where they set them up, would have a viable effect on saving lives and slowing people down. Now, are there always going to be arguments about this? Yeah, I get it. But here's the thing. I don't care what neighborhood it is, whether it's a white neighborhood, an Asian American neighborhood, an Hispanic neighborhood, a majority black neighborhood. I'm pretty sure in every dialect or in every community, being white or a community of color, the notion of using a brake pedal is probably accepted in some way, shape, or form, right? I don't know. I got to see how this shakes out. I'm all for it. What do you think? And by the way, if you go to our Facebook page here, facebook.com/WICC600, I asked a question today. We've got a couple of interesting responses to this. Facebook.com/WICC600. Where would you like your city or town to install red light or speed enforcement cameras now that they've been okayed? And I guess they're going to be okay. The governor has to sign the bill. Whether he's done that yet or not, I don't know. But let me know what you think. Call me up. Give me a specific location, because you know the movers and shakers listen to this program. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I can tell you in my town in Wallingford, where I damn well would love to have maybe not so much a speed camera, but a red light camera, a stop sign camera, right in the center of town, right in Restaurant Row there in Wallingford, the cross intersection of Center Street and North and South Main Street. You got guys and gals blowing through there. You know, I'm waiting the other night. I have the green. And, you know, thank God I was looking down at my radio, because I look up and there's somebody from my right side blowing through there. If I had been a little quicker on the accelerator, Paulie, your host, would have been doing this show from a hospital bed. So let me know what town you're in and where would you like the DOT and your local authorities, if you like the plan, to put up a red light camera, a speed camera, and a red light camera. Listen, if you blow a red light, you deserve to get a ticket. I've gotten them. And I deserved it. A big topic on this program is always police-community relations, so what police have to go through, the changes, many of them needed, coming to policing. And there's a bit of a controversy now that's been brewing for a couple of months. It's been bubbling up and has made the news cycle. I wanted to get into it and was mailed some information. I want to talk to our next guest. Pastor Rodney Wade is joining us. Pastor Wade is senior pastor of the Long Hill Bible Church in Waterbury, and he's here to discuss some use of force issues involving the Waterbury Police Department. Now, Pastor Wade is part of a group called RACCE, racial advocates for cross-cultural education. You may have seen this story bubble up a few weeks ago regarding use of force and the Waterbury PD. Hey, Pastor Wade, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you today?
I'm good, Pastor. Thanks for hanging out with us. So take my listeners back, if many of them have not been following this, Pastor Wade. What is the genesis of the concern here? I know it's with the Waterbury Police and its use of force. When did you become concerned with this, and when did your group decide to speak out about this?
So this stems from an incident that happened around February 2nd, 2023, where an individual right in the downtown area of Waterbury, it was captured on film, this individual being held down by three police officers, and then by three in total, but one of them, you know, just wailing back and, you know, and just really kind of doing some damage to this young man. In that moment, that not only brought calls for myself and others who are connected in this type of work that we do, but, you know, that kind of went all out through social media and the like. And from our perspective, we wasn't really satisfied with the initial response. It just seemed problematic that, quite frankly, a couple of days after the fact that the police would come forward and simply say, you know, that the officer was justified, you know, without, you know, some type of investigation, specifically all of these things coming out of what we've seen in recent years with George Floyd mm-hmm. and the like. We believe, you know, that the police departments, they have a higher responsibility, specifically as it relates to community. And so, you know, that put us into a heightened sense of urgency. And so we sent out a letter to the chief of police and the mayor, if you will, requesting, you know, a sit down, an opportunity to come and have a conversation about what actually went down in this mm-hmm. particular incident.
Pastor Wade, when you say the police said, you know, well, you know, this was justified because of what happened. How deeply, if you will, did they explain that? You said you and your group and your advocates, you weren't satisfied. Were you you weren't satisfied with the response or the detail of it or the justification? Did you feel that the city and the police were thorough enough in their investigation or not?
Well, you know, here's the thing, you know, after requesting information through the FOI process, we discovered that, you know, in an 8-month span, there had been 207 incidents of use of force there in the city of Waterbury. And after having a conversation with the chief of police, in every single one of those incidents, they basically ruled out that the officer was in the right, you know, and from our perspective, that, you know, and we act specifically, so you're saying you're perfect, and in our sense is they felt good about saying, yes, we're perfect, and, you know, living in an imperfect world, that you know, that just really doesn't make sense, and so, again, how do you go from this incident happening, and then a couple of days later, you coming out in front of the camera and saying, our officer was justified. To me, that doesn't seem like a thorough investigation happened as it relates to this process.
Pastor Rodney Wade is the guest. He is senior pastor of the Long Hill Bible Church in Waterbury, and he, along with a group called RACCE, Racial Advocates for Cross-Cultural Education, looking into an incident that happened in the middle of February and that has raised concerns about a use of force or the policies for such with the Waterbury Police Department. So, Pastor Wade, now let's fast forward to further in the investigation to today. Where do we stand on this? Has the admission of anything changed from the Waterbury Police Department? What's the update here?
No, I think we are where we were after the initial meeting with the police chief. Listen, our position is simple, right? Policing must have civilian oversight, must be compliant with state laws that govern police behavior, and must be willing to be held accountable to the communities that they're supposed to protect and serve. And an unwillingness to do that seems to be very problematic from our standpoint. You know, when we look at policing in Waterbury, specifically when we think about crime, the reality is there has been an overall reduction in crime in Waterbury, especially violent crimes from 2018 to 2022. But yet what we still see, specifically in Waterbury, is this kind of military-like police presence, and it's growing in Waterbury. And so from our perspective, you should be open to oversight, right? So if we are submitting for particular information, it shouldn't take us a long period of time to get that information back. And then upon giving us that information, we shouldn't have to pay an enormous amount of money just to get access to the particular information. And so I think at this moment, this is where we are, right? We're simply saying, hey, there was a police accountability bill that was put in place in 2020, and that the Waterbury Police Department has a responsibility to be in compliance to that, to develop policies that speak to that particular bill, and to do things that would change the perspective, if you will, that many Black and brown people feel in that particular city. Listen, just to kind of give an example, right, mm-hmm. around optics, and we shared this with the police chief, right? So there was an incident. An officer is out there. He is stopping traffic for whatever reason. Caucasian female runs through this police officer, does not hit the police officer, but yet did not obey his orders. Mm-hmm. The police officer chases her down. He uses some harsh words with this particular lady, and this officer gets fired, right? He gets fired.
Okay.
Now juxtapose this to downtown Waterbury, African-American man being held up by police. They're using force on this particular man, and 2 days later, our officer did nothing wrong. And so just simply from that perspective, the optics do not look good. And this is simply what we're saying is that, hey, you have to be open to not only be in compliance, but also to be objective, but then also to be open to us coming in and questioning certain actions. Mm-hmm. And we didn't feel up until this point that they were really open to that, specifically in the manner in terms of how long it took for us to get the information. We weren't really interested in just simply coming in and having a kumbaya conversation. We wanted to make sure that we would have the data in front of us so that we could have a useful conversation. And so from our perspective, there's yet work to be done. You know, when you get this retort like, hey, in terms of our use of force, mm-hmm. we're perfect in that, that just seems to be problematic. So, yes, there's still plenty of work to do.
And does your group, Pastor Wade, or the people that you're associated with and pushing this forward, have you or are you considering more legal means here to help in your investigation here? Any intention of that?
Well, right now we receive a litany, a plethora of documents, and so at this point we are still going through mm-hmm. almost 3,000 pages of data as it relates to the use of force in Waterbury. Right, again, over an 8-month span, you know, to kind of get this information and correlate this information, it takes a little bit of time, and so that's where we are right now. I'm really kind of taking a deep dive into the data, and then from that point, we will proceed forward.
And finally, Pastor Wade, before we let you go, I got to ask you, you know, there are going to be people out there, maybe you've already heard this from other people, but, you know, people are going to hear this and say, well, it's easy to criticize the police because you and I aren't trying to arrest somebody who's noncompliant. You know what people say sometimes, don't tell the police how to do their job. I'm sure you've heard that. What would you tell somebody if they said that to you right now? What are your thoughts on that line of thinking?
I would say that's the biggest problem. We all have a job to do. Listen, in the profession that I operate in, there's a lot of criticism that comes to pastors and religious leaders. That's a part of the responsibility of taking on the task. And so the same thing holds true even for our police departments, right? At the end of the day, you should be open to civilian oversight. You should be open to being compliant to bills that have been passed in the state of Connecticut, and you should be open to people questioning certain things that we see, specifically when we see some data that kind of supports what we're seeing. And so I get it. You know, it's a tough job. A lot of professions have tough jobs. A lot of professions have to hold up to scrutiny, and I don't think that the police department should be any different.
Pastor Rodney Wade, senior pastor at the Long Hill Bible Church in Waterbury. Pastor, thank you for the time, and you've got our number here now, and you have a gentleman working with you who has my email, so anything else on this, feel free to chime in. I'd love to hear from you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Appreciate it. Pastor Rodney Wade, senior pastor, Long Hill Bible Church in Waterbury. All right, and I will now effort a call in to Waterbury City Hall or the mayor's office there, perhaps, and see if they have a response to this interview. And I would love to get maybe the police chief or the mayor to come on here and to talk about this. I promise you I will call. All right, once again, thanks to Pastor Rodney Wade, senior pastor, Long Hill Bible Church in Waterbury, and there are his folks with him affiliated with the group Radical Advocates for Cross-Cultural Education. Time to check in with our regular Wednesday contributor who is not in the Bronx. He's actually overseas. Dan Haar is with us. Dan, did you tell me you're in France?
Something like that, yes. Did you say the Yankees were postponed because of poor middle relief? Is that what you said?
No, Dan, I'm sure you've been getting photos here from folks here. This Canadian cloud of smoke is nasty here. This is wild stuff.
Yes, the Connecticut Post, actually all of our websites, but I think it's highlighted in the Post, had pictures of Bridgeport early this morning and then late this afternoon, with dramatic differences between the when the smoke and the haze filtered in.
Yeah,
it's really it's the sort of identical pictures shot by photographers from different times of the day, and it really shows what's happening.
So the Yankees are postponed till tomorrow, game one of a single admission doubleheader. Now, you from afar have been watching what's going on with the state budget, and Dan, am I wrong here? I can't remember the last time, maybe you will, where there was as much kumbaya as we seem to have on this. What are your thoughts on this?
I was trying to remember, and I was talking to some folks. I was there for the adoption of the budget by the House, but not the Senate. And I think we had a couple of easy budgets under REL, but in the early 2000s, before the recession, I think. But I'm not. I wouldn't bet on it. Nothing like this. Certainly nothing like this, because here you had Republicans and Democrats were complaining about the budget. Either too much, too little tax cuts or too little spending, depending on which party you were in. But in the end, almost everyone voted for it. 12 conservative Republicans voted against it in the House, and only one, Rob Sampson, in the Senate. So, you know, a vote is a vote, and people complain, but in the end, it's pretty good consensus. I think the people that are the most upset in the outside world, because there's no taxpayer group per se, are the nonprofit service providers.
You know, Dan, there were a couple of people quoted in various media outlets, some longtime Democratic lawmakers, who said something interesting. They said, you know, maybe we got to this point because there are a lot of new members here who have gone through this, you know, for the first time here. I found that interesting, Dan. Do you think, I mean, I know the money had the surplus had a lot to do with it, but new blood, maybe some of it taking hold in Hartford? What do you think?
That was Representative Tony Walker, the House Chair of Appropriations, who made the comment while standing next to Representative Maria Horn, who is one of those new legislators and who is the Chair of Finance. I don't buy it. But, you know, listen, she was there in the meetings every day. I guess she saw some of that. And the bottom line is the budget took a lot longer than everybody had thought. Remember, 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, we had an agreement in principle.
Yeah.
And we thought we were going to have a budget early, and we didn't. And the reason is because various members wanted various spending items put in. And some of those spending items were put in. For example, $32 million was put in at the last minute over Lamont's objections to support the federally qualified health care centers, the community health care centers. That's just one example. It's not a particularly that is pretty large, $32 million. You know, and that's just one example. Some people needed that to bring their votes around.
You had mentioned to me as we were chatting online beforehand the treasurer's bill and maybe a reaction to that Yale study and the fact that Connecticut's treasurer really doesn't have anybody looking over his or her shoulder. What are your thoughts on that? What actually happened? Was it good enough or not, Dan?
Well, there's a lot to unpack in that question. First of all, the treasurer reform bill, which did pass yesterday or today, the days are blending together, both because of the end of the session and because of time zones for me. But it was totally unrelated to the Yale study. It was in the works and had a public hearing long before the Yale study was even public. And it essentially gives more leeway to members of the investment advisory committee to serve on the committee if they have conflicts. They can recuse themselves from individual conflicts. Presently, they can't be on the committee at all if they have any potential conflicts. It also pays the investor, the mid-level investment advice staff, more, and it works through a system to give them a ladder to more responsibility. So it's a more, they say it's a more professionally run investment staff, and a few changes. I know that Jeff Sonnenfeld at Yale believes that we need to end the sole fiduciary status in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. That's a next year debate. The Democrats, for some reason, don't want to do that, but we'll have the debate.
Finally, Dan, before we let you go, where does this in your mind, and I know we'll be through this again in another couple of years with the biennium, but boy, I got to tell you, if I'm Governor Lamont, I'm thinking, hey, this is all good now. And, you know, you saw where the Wall Street Journal had a piece a few days ago. Hey, Connecticut's actually cutting taxes. I saw Newsweek a couple of months ago, Dan, with an article to the effect of, hey, not for nothing, but on business issues, Ned Lamont might be a Republican. Where do you think this puts the governor now for the next couple, 3 years?
Oh, he could run for president, right? The only problem with this is that the cycle cycles back around, as it did for Massachusetts and Connecticut and all the other states. You have an up cycle. We're in an up cycle now where both politically and economically we're in position to cut taxes. That may not last. We hope it lasts, but you know, virtuous cycles don't hold because of any number of things. Maybe when the pandemic relief money runs out, maybe when the markets finally flatten out for a true bear market, maybe the labor markets in Connecticut won't hold. Those are just three. Well, those are the bigger three factors. But you can't assume it's going to go on forever. This is a good moment for Connecticut right now.
Dan Haar, Dan, thank you. Always good to hear from Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media, midweek Wednesday, every Wednesday at 5, and Dan reporting from the Hearst Paris Bureau this evening. So, Dan,
great. I always say great to be here, and today I really mean great to be here.
Dan, good for you. Dan, safe travels the rest of the way, and we'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
Very good.
All right, thanks. Dan Haar there. Man, technology. I remember when I used to have overseas guests years ago doing shows like this, right? Because I messaged Dan this morning, as I always do, hey, what do you want to talk about this afternoon? And he said, hey, I'm actually in Paris. And I was about to say, hey, don't worry about it. He goes, no, I have really good cell service here. I mean, think about that, right? I just talked to somebody on the phone right here, and it sounded great, and he was in Paris. I remember doing shows like this 10, 20, 25, 30 years ago. Hey, I got pitched for a guest. Okay, well, listen, he can't call me. Why not? Well, he's in Italy or France. Well, can we call out? I had a few radio bosses in the past who would say, transatlantic for 20 minutes? Hell no.